Bhagwan, is God really dead, as Friedrich Nietzsche says? Satsang. Friedrich Nietzsche is one of the most important beings in the whole history of man, of the same caliber as Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, Mahavira, Buddha, Zarathustra. He would have become an enlightened being. But something went wrong. Instead of going through a breakthrough, he went through a breakdown. What really went wrong was the Western atmosphere, the whole Western intellectual climate. The responsibility is of the Christian Church. The Christian Church is the culprit. It has destroyed the possibility of many, many people like Friedrich Nietzsche of becoming enlightened. The Christian Church has destroyed all intellectual freedom in the West. The people who showed any sign of rebellion were burned alive. Their books were burned, prohibited. The Christian Church has been one of the most fascist organizations in the history of man. It is not an accident that fascism, Nazism, communism, all three dangerous dictatorial trends of this century are outcomes of Christianity. The East cannot be held responsible. Because in the East, the intellectual freedom has always existed, has always been respected. No intellectual in the East has been crucified like Jesus. No philosopher has been poisoned like Socrates. No mystic has been murdered like Al-Hillaz Mansur. And the East has known more people like Socrates than the West. And the East has produced more people like Jesus than the West. And the East is studded with mystics like Al-Hillaz Mansur. But never, not even in a single instance, we have destroyed anybody's freedom. We have respected freedom as the ultimate value. Hence, when a man becomes enlightened and attains to the ultimate truth, we say he has attained to moksha. The word moksha means absolute freedom. Unconditional freedom. A freedom from where no fall is possible. But Christianity has been very dictatorial. The ultimate consequence was that only the mediocre people remained in the church and the intelligent people left the church. Or even if they remained in the church, they remained only formally. Their hearts were not with the church. Friedrich Nietzsche became so disgusted with Christianity, and he knew only Christianity. He never knew anything about Zen, Sufism. Otherwise, he would have been a totally different man. The breakdown may not have happened. The breakdown may have changed into a breakthrough. He fought against the whole tradition of Christian domination, so much so that finally he became Antichrist. He was fascinated with the personality of Jesus. But because Jesus is at the root, unfortunately, not that he intended to be at the root of Christian church, but it happened so, that the whole church is based on Christ's idea, that Friedrich Nietzsche became Antichrist. In his last days, he had started signing his name, Antichrist Friedrich Nietzsche. He went mad. He risked his sanity, but he saved his freedom. I respect the man. I love the man. I would have liked him to become a Buddha. He had all the potential, but he was in a wrong climate. He needed the Eastern freedom and the Eastern soil. His antagonism became so much that not only he became against Christ, he became an arch enemy of God himself. Because deeper he looked into the phenomenon, he found that Jesus is not the real foundation of the Christian church. The real foundation rests on God, on the idea of God. Unless you remove that very foundation, the church cannot collapse. Hence his statement that God is dead. You may not have heard the whole statement. This is only the part. And the whole is very significant. The whole statement is, rejoice, God is dead, and now man is absolutely free. Then it makes sense. Rejoice that God is dead. Now there is nobody to dominate you. That there is nobody above you. That you need not be afraid of any gods. That you can forget all about God and Jehovah. Because the Jewish Christian Mohammedan idea of God is not of a very nice fellow. He is not a gentleman. The Jeeves God, which is at the root of both the Christian and the Mohammedan God, says himself, I am a very jealous God. Those who are against me, I will destroy them. Those who are not with me are against me. And those who are with me will have all the pleasures of heaven, and those who are not with me will suffer eternal hellfire. Nietzsche says, rejoice, God is dead. There is no heaven and no hell. Don't be afraid of hell. And don't be greedy for heaven, because there is no God. God is dead. And man is absolutely free. This has been done in the East in a far more subtle, delicate way. Mahavira says there is no God. For the same reason as Nietzsche. Mahavira says, if there is God, then man cannot be free. There is a very significant logic in it. If there is a God, then man cannot be free. How man can be free? Because man is just a created creature. God decided to create you, he created you. If he decides tomorrow to uncreate you, he will uncreate you. What freedom you have got. It is God's decision to create you the way you are. You are not responsible for it. How can you be held responsible for all the instincts that have been given to you by God? Mahavira said, see the futility of the whole argument of the theists. See the ridiculousness of the whole idea of man's condemnation because of sex, because of anger, because of greed. What man can do? If God created man in this way, then God is responsible, not man. And why he created this type of man and this type of world? If anybody has to suffer, then God has to suffer, not man. Man is only a creature. It is like you made toys. Now, if something is wrong with the toy, who is responsible? You cannot condemn the toy. You make machines. If something goes wrong, then you are responsible, not the machine. When on Nagasaki and Hiroshima atom bombs were dropped, you cannot condemn atom bombs or atomic energy. You can only condemn the politicians who used atom bombs there. You can condemn the scientists who created those atom bombs. And Albert Einstein felt continuously after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He was sad. And the day he died, somebody asked him, if you are going to be born again, What would you like to be? Would you like to be a physicist, a mathematician again or not? Einstein said, no, never. Rather being a physicist, I would like to be a plumber. Because I have done so much harm to humanity, unconsciously of course. But you cannot say that about God, that he has created man unconsciously. Even if God is unconscious, then what is the possibility of man ever becoming conscious? Mahavira says there is no God, because only in the non-existence of God, man becomes responsible. And I agree with Mahavira, with Buddha, with Nietzsche. The first and the foremost quality of a religious person is self-responsibility. To feel that I am responsible for whatsoever I am. It is my choice. I had been given all the alternatives. I was born open-ended. Nothing was predetermined. Whatsoever I am, it is my responsibility, good or bad. There is no fate, no God. Mahavira denied God, but he never went mad like Nietzsche. Meditation saved him. Buddha denied God. Not only God, Buddha went a step further. In fact, now there is no more to go further. Buddha denied God and Buddha denied self. Buddha said there is no God and no self. Buddha said if there is a self, then again, you cannot be totally free. Your self will have certain qualities and those qualities will go on persisting. They will be intrinsic. Your freedom will be conditional. The first thing is to get rid of God. The second thing is to get rid of yourself. Then your freedom is total. Then there is only freedom and nothing else. But Buddha never went mad for the simple reason. Meditation saved him. Nietzsche would have been a Mahavira or a Buddha, but there was no meditative dimension available to him. Once you deny God, the whole mountainous responsibility of your being falls on your own head. You can be crushed by it. That's what happened. Nietzsche was crushed under his own freedom. He was not able to cope with the freedom. God, as Christians, Mohammedans, Jews, and Hindus have conceived, does not exist. But I will not say that there is no God like Mahavira or Buddha or Nietzsche. I say life is God. In fact, I don't want to use the word God. My own preference is Bhagavata, godliness. The existence is full of godliness. And in deep meditation, you become part of that godliness. If God is life, synonymous with life, then there is no question of God dying. Life cannot die. It is eternal. I have heard there are 2 tombstones seen on a remote part of the planet. On one is written, God is dead, signed Friedrich Nietzsche. On the other is written, Nietzsche is dead, signed God. And I think the second is truer. Nietzsche is dead. God is not dead in Nietzsche's sense, because his idea of God was basically wrong. It was a Christian idea. God as a person and a dominant person. One of the great Indian mystics, a Baul of Bengal. The word Baul means a madman. The Bauls are really mad, madly in love with God. This mad Baul, Chandidas says, Sabar upar manus satya, tahar upar nai. Man's truth is the highest truth. There is no other truth higher than that. He's saying the same thing as Nietzsche, but in a more positive way. He is declaring man's godhood, man's godliness. Nietzsche simply denies and affirms nothing. His denial brings a negative emptiness. Chandidas denies, but his denial brings a positive emptiness. Sabar upar manus satya. The highest truth is the truth of man, and there is no truth higher than that. He is also saying there is no God, but he is at the same time declaring that you are God. God is not dead because life is alive. The flowers are still flowering, birds are still singing. The existence continues. How can God be dead? But Nietzsche is dead, and his life was a life of tremendous misery. It was unfortunate that he was born in the West, in a Christian climate. He needed the Eastern atmosphere. He needed to be in a Zen monastery or a Sufi commune. Still, he would have come to know there is no God, but then he would not have gone mad. On the contrary, he would have become enlightened. Bhagwan are Indians really so unintelligent as you say? Sant Maharaj don't lose your heart. There are even people far worse than the Indians. Always think of them and you will feel good and cheerful. There are Pollocks. Bhavita has asked me, Bhagwan, why do pulaks open the bedroom door while they are making love? Bhavita, so that nobody can peep through the keyhole. This is intelligence. Bhavita has also asked, Bhagwan, do you know what did the pulak answer who was walking home from a fair with a pig under his arm, and a guy who knew him came up to him and asked, where did you get him? Bhavita, before the pulak could answer, the pig replied, I won him at the fair. So there are pulaks. Sant, don't be worried. Bhavita asks, Bhagwan, did you hear about the pulak who tried to take his new car for its first service? Yes, Bhavita, it would not fit through the church doors. And Bhavita asks, why is the pulak toilet paper 500 seats longer than usual? Bhavita, because the first 500 seats are instructions. Sant Maharaj, cheer up. There is no need to be worried. Bhavita asks, why can't one put a pulak into a cannon? Bhavita, because according to the Geneva Convention, dum-dum bullets are illegal. And Bhavita also asks, how is a pulak ladder different from an ordinary one? Bhavita, it has a stop sign at the top. Otherwise, the pulak will never stop. He will go on and on. The ladder will be left behind. And you sis, are Indians really so unintelligent as you say? Not all Indians. Sant is not unintelligent. I make him sit by my side. Somebody has asked a question. The questioner is Ducoli Emilio. He says, Bhagwan, if someone said to you, don't speak, don't be silent, but tell me who you are, what would you be your answer? For that, Sant is sitting by my side. He will hit him as hard as possible. In the old days, Zen masters used to hit themselves. I am a lazy person. And Sant is a good boxer. And you know, boxing needs no intelligence. Sant will teach him a lesson. That is the special purpose. He is allowed to sit by my side. I will not answer Dukoli. I will simply look at Sant and Sant will answer. A man came to me once and he said that 24 avatars were born in India. 24 Tirthankaras were born in India. Gautam Buddha was born in India, and also in his previous lives he was always born in India. And so many saints and so many Mahatmas, and God has said in Gita that I will always come whenever I am needed. And he has always been coming to India. Still you say that India is a materialist country. Still you say that India is not very intelligent. Still you say that India has no special spirituality, that it is not a religious land. I said, yes, still I say that. In fact, all these things prove what I say. In Gita, Krishna says, whenever you will need me, I will come. It seems India needs gods more than any other country. Twenty-four avatars, and where we are, we still need, even 48 avatars won't help us much. Whatsoever they do, we are experts in undoing it. 24 Tirthankaras, and what has happened? It is like a man brags about his health because he says, look, all the doctors of this city visit to me. I must be having the best of health in the world. He must be the most ill person in the world if all the doctors have to visit him continuously. God has been visiting India so much that it seems it is a mess. Yes, Buddha is intelligent, but how many Buddhas are there? Mahavira is intelligent, but how many Mahaviras are there? Yes, once in a while, in millions of people, a person has risen to the ultimate heights, but how many? They can be counted on fingers. And don't think that their intelligence is your intelligence. Don't live in a reflected glory. That is utterly foolish. That's what we have been doing for centuries, living in a reflected glory. Krishna, Buddha, Mahavira, and we feel so happy that we completely forget that we have to do something too, that we have to be intelligent too, that we have to create something too. Yes, there have been spiritual people in India, but India is not a spiritual land. And there have been intelligent people, but India has not proved intelligent itself. As a country, For 2000 years we have been under slavery. Is this intelligence? As a country, I think India has the lowest morality in the world. The whole Indian idea of morality is concentrated on sex. Anything else has nothing to do with it. You can lie and nobody will think you immoral. You can deceive. You can be insincere. You can promise to come today and for months you may not come and nobody will think you are immoral. In India, promise means nothing. If somebody says, I am coming at 5, he may come at 4, he may come at 6, he may not come at all today. He may come tomorrow at 5. And you cannot say that this is immoral. People are adulterating everything. Not only milk, even medicines are adulterated. You cannot rely on Indian medicines. You may be hoping that the injection is going to save you. It may kill you because it may be just ordinary water. Not even pure water. Everything is unreliable. The whole morality consists of that you cling to your wife and your wife clings to you. That you remain like detectives after each other. That is your whole morality. This is a very silly idea of morality and a very limited idea of morality. In fact, to live with a woman you don't love is immoral. Whether she is your wife or not does not matter. To live with a man, to go in bed with a man you don't love, he may be your husband. But it is immoral. It is prostitution. Of course, approved by the society, but approval cannot make any difference. And how many couples love each other? I have been a guest in hundreds of families all over India, and I have never come across more than 2 or 3 couples who are really in love. Otherwise, they are enemies, fighting each other, tooth and nail, always at each other's necks, but very moral, because the wife strictly remains faithful to the man. To the man she loves not. What kind of faith is this? And the man remains faithful to the woman whom he always wants to murder, or hopes that somebody else will do the thing, or hopes that some natural calamity, the house collapses in the rain, or some illness catches her, or something. And in India, things are always happening. Buses falling in the rivers, aeroplanes clashing, trains disappearing. So one goes on hoping that someday something is bound to happen. And I will get rid of this woman. But till then, He is faithful to the woman whom he has never loved. Without love, can there be faith? It is only fear, not faith. It is formality, not faith. It is just cowardliness, not faith. If you are brave, if you are really a man, you will say to the woman that I don't love you. Hence, I cannot go on reproducing children from you. And the woman will say, I don't love you either. So it is better we part company. But this is our whole morality. The whole India is almost against me for the simple reason because they think I am destroying their morality. I am not destroying their morality. I am bringing a real moral sense to you. Now my movement to the Kutch is opposed because I will destroy the morality of Kutch. But I cannot go on destroying the morality of Pune only. I have to move. I have to destroy a few other people's morality. What morality you have got? I am coming to Kutch to destroy your immorality. I call all this that goes in the name of morality immoral. It is utterly immoral. The whole idea of marriage is immoral, and an arranged marriage is basically immoral. Only a love marriage has a morality, and that too only to the extent the love is alive. The moment love disappears, morality disappears. Yes, in India we have seen great enlightened people, but they are like silver lines around black clouds. Don't believe that those silver lines are of much help. You cannot even read. When there is lightning, you cannot even read, you cannot write. Yes, for a moment you can see, and then all is darkness, even more darker than it was before. Whenever a Buddha dies, this country falls into a deeper valley of darkness. Yes, when a Buddha is alive, there is a little glory around him, a little splendor, a little light. But that too is available only to those who are courageous, and India is a country of cowards. Otherwise, how you can explain 2000 years of slavery? Yes, once in a while, Sant Maharaj, there are people who are intelligent and they invent few things and they need Nobel Prizes. I have heard this story. At the Vatican in Rome, a gathering of missionaries from all over the world met to discuss their experiences in the third world countries. The priests working in India were talking together. Well, father, how are things going in India? Asked the African priest. Very well, thank you, father, he replied. We have been working on ways to ease the food shortage and have found a new way to reduce the population. How? Inquired the African priest. Are you using new methods of birth control? No. After much experimentation, we have seen that that does not work. So we have invented a very simple and effective technique, the crunch-scrunch method. What is that? Asked the priest, intrigued. In the big centers like Bombay and Calcutta, our organization has begun to construct new hygienic male toilets but with a unique design. When a patron squats down to sit, his balls hang down through two separate holes, and we have one of our workers standing underneath with a brick in each hand. Crunch, scrunch. We smash their balls together. Holy Mother of God, exclaimed the other priest with a gasp, that must hurt. I know, not really, said the Indian priest. Not if you keep your thumbs out of the way. Enough for today. Ha ha ha.